Hi, it's Brock Romanek, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Mike Tankersley, who's a partner of Bracewell and Giuliani, who's recently written a 120-page handbook, Board Leadership for the Company in Crisis, along with Suzanne Hopgood, which is published by the NACD. And Mike's going to spend some time talking with us about crisis planning and crisis response, a topic that I still think that boards and other company representatives don't spend enough time with, because I think if you're in-house long enough, it's only a matter of time before you're faced with a crisis. Even if the company is humming smoothly, that's when you know probably that something's going to go wrong. Mike, the first question I have for you is you know, what led you to take on the subject and write the book with Suzanne?
Well, you know, I've been doing this about 25 years, representing public companies, working with their boards and management, and in that time, a high percentage of them have had something very severe and negative happen, and I guess I've gotten a chance to, you know, stand by, watch these things develop, help them try to deal with them. And, you know, the ones who did well, you know, generally, first of all, had experience and good judgment, and then they planned for their response, so they were able to deal with the situation well. Those that didn't plan seem to flounder around and keep making mistakes. My co-author Suzanne Hopgood is a turnaround CEO, and we worked on a number of distressed companies together. We spoke to a group of directors of the NACDO like in 2003 on this subject, and as we were preparing that, we noticed nobody had really written anything that was focused advice to boards. There were books for managers and advisors for management, but how to provide, you know, the oversight role and respond to crisis really hadn't been addressed.
So as I mentioned, it seems to me that crisis planning would be conducted, you know, regularly at most companies, but it doesn't seem to be the case. Why do you think that happens like that?
Well, it's a funny thing. Most experienced managers, if you say, well, have you encountered crises, and they can go on for a while. They pick up good war stories doing that. Most business schools don't teach crisis response management, which, you know, when you talk to the people that do it, when you're in the midst of one and see it done well, you realize there's a very distinct discipline, and a lot of the normal conceptions of how you manage a company or situation get turned on their head. And when you talk to management, almost every management will have a crisis plan of some sort somewhere. And a lot of them, if you just ask the simple question as a director, you know, do we have a crisis plan? They'll say, you bet we do. It's here in this notebook. But when you look at it, a lot of them are very thinly done. They're superficially done. They were, you know, like most IT functions are very critical to businesses, and those guys pretty much always have a plan for what to do if the IT system goes down. But they don't really have a plan for, you know, what happens to the rest of the company in the midst of a hurricane or, you know, a government invasion of government agents, that sort of stuff. And so you really have to dig deeper. And, I mean, one of the things we do in the book is provide, you know, an inventory of questions that, you know, directors can ask to dig a little deeper and see if they've really done their work or if it's, again, just a superficial job.
In my mind, it's almost like getting married. When you get married, you're thinking the rosy things, and you don't really learn the things you need to deal with. I think in relationships over time, there's always going to be some sort of crisis, I think. So what role do preparation and practice play in crisis management?
Well, you know, the first thing you should do is sort of plan, and which is a process of going through and say, what could happen to us that would be bad? And most CEOs have a list of things that keep them, you know, up at night. The senior management team will do that. You read the press, you see what's happening to other companies, you can build a list. Once you've developed your list of potential negative events that could turn into crises, the next thing, again, that I think that experienced people in this area, they refer to them as the three P's, planning, preparation, and practice. Preparation is actually doing the work to get all the resources into position that you'll need. That's what that is having, I think every public company day needs to anticipate that it could be the topic of, an SEC investigation, a Justice Department investigation into their financial reporting. They need to have an SEC white-collar defense lawyer who is an identified individual, has been brought to the company, talked with, terms of engagements discussed, and, you know, is ready to go. And they know that that company will be their client if that problem arises and will avoid conflicts. You know, that level of preparation. You'll find, like, during Hurricane Katrina, you know, if you talk to the people that were operating hospitals down there, a number of the hospitals had to shut down because they only had 2 or 3 days worth of fuel to run their generators. And when the fuel was gone, the generators stopped and the patients had to leave. But they all remarked that HCA, because they operated so much in Florida, had seen a hurricane or two, owned their own fuel trucks, and had delivered large quantities of fuel to the site to keep the HCA hospitals running. You know, those people had prepared.
Yeah.
Practice means actually going through simulations, and I think this is where a lot of managers that I talk to will kind of roll their eyes, like, who has time to do that? And isn't that kind of silly to pretend that something's going on? We had one company I know of that was a chemical plant operator who, you know, got the message on this, said, okay, we need to really be ready, and the CEO told the crisis response team, guys, I want you to run, somewhere in the next 6 months, I want you to run a simulation on a weekend, and I don't want to know that it's a drill until the minute we're ready to go public. And sure enough, about 3 months later, phone rings at 7 p.m. on Saturday night. We've had an explosion. Chemicals have been released into the air and into the water in this neighborhood. We're evacuating people, and the company has to respond. They pulled in people from all over, got a war room going. They had their staff there with coffee and donuts. They had their PR people there, all of whom were brought in and prepared, you know, press releases, messages to the government. And at, you know, 10 a.m. the next morning, when they were ready to step out into the cameras, the crisis team said, this is a drill. Now, what did that do for them? In this case, you know, they turned out that a couple of their senior management guys just did not operate well under that degree of pressure. They weren't able to focus, they weren't able to perform. And so that's an important thing to know. And it's very, I think that is the most valuable thing they learned, is that there were some weak links in their crisis response chain that they needed to address.
So what are the hurdles, you think, to companies engaging in systematic planning? Is it cultural, or what do you typically see there?
Well, this is one of these things that in a busy world, there's a whole host of reasons why people don't do it. The agendas are crowded at companies. All of the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance work that's had to be done while still trying to maintain strategic focus has taken up a lot of space. Because they don't teach this in business school, and because it's not often identified as a separate discipline for focus, you know, board and managements may not be familiar with the process. A lot of people don't really believe in the value of it, despite, if you study it, a lot of evidence. I mean, they kind of have the attitude, hey, we're smarter, we're more honest, that won't happen to us. Or, well, hey, if it does happen, we are so smart and fast on our feet that we can respond. And then lastly, people tend to take the view that, well, gee, these events are unpredictable, and why waste a lot of time and money, you know, planning for something that we can't predict will happen?
So you give an example of failure to plan sort of in the hurricane context. What about for in the corporate world?
Well, when you study a lot of the big meltdowns that occur, you realize that it's like a whole chain of dominoes falling over. And, if you plan for these events, you can stop the dominoes from falling over much earlier in the chain, whereas if you're not, you keep making mistakes or you start moving fast. And, you know, independent operators get out there and make mistakes. Looking at the Hewlett-Packard situation. Now, I mean, I don't think any of us knows enough about what went on there to announce judgment on anything that anybody did. But at the same time, there's been a lot of, you know, presentations of facts in the newspaper of things that went on. And, you know, it seems to me that one thing that you could point up to a lack of preparation there was it looked like Patty Dunn, as chairman of the board, was really controlling to a much greater degree than is consistent with being a director what was going on in that investigation. And in the heat of battle, those kind of things happen. If you plan your response to that type of event, though, you get, you know, 5-6 people in the room that all have judgment, experience with these things, you know, that issue will be addressed. You know, who is the point person when we're doing this type of emergency investigation? The answer is it always has to be a management person and presumably a lawyer acting as a team. You don't want a director typically in there, you know, with their hands on the steering wheel driving that. You know, at the same time, you can discuss, okay, if you have experienced white-collar criminal counsel in the room, you can discuss tactics. If you have PR people in the room, you can discuss the public's reaction, which you know, at a Fortune 100 company with the profile that Hewlett-Packard has, you can assume that even things that are legal, if they are going to be unpopular, may cause more problems than the benefit that's gained. And the ability to plan how to deal with that situation on a calm, sunny day with a lot of smart, educated people in the room gives you a real leg up when it comes time to execute under fire and in a hurry. You know, on the option backdating stuff out here, you know, a lot of companies stumble when the government agents come to the door. They've not planned for what the very first people that see the agents are supposed to say. They've not planned within the organization for how to maintain the security of documents. And so what happens is a lot of times companies will end up, you know, at either lower or at higher levels destroying documents, creating an obstruction of justice charge when the original thing that was going to be investigated may not have been that serious. You also have the issue of officers stepping out and making statements that, you know, we're innocent, we have nothing to hide, we did nothing wrong. Perhaps, you know, while still advised by civil SEC counsel, and then it turns out upon deeper investigation that, in fact, someone somewhere did something wrong, but now you have the senior officer as a speaker for the organization making a statement that was false. And he's pulled into a situation that didn't have his fingerprints on it. Hmm. You know, having good advice, same thing. You know, Ken Lay was prosecuted mostly over statements he made after it was well known that there was smoke in the room and possibly a fire. And you just have to ask yourself, if experienced white-collar criminal defense counsel had been immediately brought into that situation and his advice taken, would those statements have been made with that amount of smoke in the room? And I think that you'd say probably not. And it's those types of early moment errors that planning, preparation, practice will tend to avoid.
So on the flip side, what are examples of crisis management paying off for a company?
Well, you know, there's a number of examples of companies that were devastated in the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center, financial services companies that were able to start serving customers again within 24 hours from alternative locations. I mean, those, to be able to do that, you had to have planned, prepared, and practiced, and had your systems really ready for peak performance. One example, Suzanne and I wrote an article in the NACD Director Monthly about Walmart's response to Hurricane Katrina. You know, they, as you'd expect a company that size, they were prepared to, you know, their managers had a very good plan about how to shut down a store in the face of an approaching storm and then get it back up quickly afterwards. And, you know, they had logistical support. They were moving water and food and flashlights and batteries and stuff into staging positions near but not in the path of the hurricane. But one of the great stories out of that was one of their managers in a small town where, okay, the hurricane came through, there was no power, the police were nowhere to be seen, and people started straggling up wanting to go in the store, get food, clothing, stuff like that. Now, that manager was completely cut off from contact with the central operations area for this this hurricane. No one had ever told her what to do if there is no police support, if there is no power for a day or two or three. And what she did, after looking at the situation, was start giving stuff away. Everybody that came up that needed something, she would give it to them. Now, I mean, she did that without knowing that was the right thing to do. And, you know, where Walmart was at risk there, and any company that doesn't plan is at risk, is that she could have very easily decided that her prime directive was to protect her employer's property against theft. And the headlines could have been, Walmart, you know, manager shoots looters. And you can imagine the PR effect of that on a company like Walmart. And it is those frontline employees that make these decisions. And what allowed her the time to make the right decision was that the 200 other decisions that to deal with that store situation had already been made and reflected in a plan that she had in her hands. I mean, those are the kinds of things that that, you know, we're, yeah, planning is the only thing that keeps a company from having that bad headline when somebody makes a mistake in that circumstance.
So aside from the war stories, which I always find very effective, what is your best argument that you make to a board to try to get them to engage in more crisis management planning?
Well, you know, after kind of, you know, showing the examples, I think there's really two leading arguments. Is first that the crisis planning will actually avoid some amount of crisis by getting people to focus on risks of this nature. I mean, there's some risks you can insure against, but there's others where the only real remedy is just a high level of vigilance and a quick, crisp response when they come in. And by getting people down through the organization to focus on that risk and how it would show up and what to do when it shows, they have a lot greater degree of respect for that problem, and they tend to respond to the signs faster. And when they see it coming, they'll immediately send news of it up to the executive suite. In a lot of organizations, bad news travels very slowly. I mean, there's fear that the messenger will be shot. And if you tell employees, no, it's important for this message to get through, it'll get through. And then the second big argument, which I mentioned earlier, is that, you know, management already have a full-time job running a healthy company under normal conditions. And when a crisis hits, especially a fast-moving one, they may have to make dozens or even hundreds of critical decisions in a very short time period with limited information without maybe direct experience in managing that situation. A planning process will make a lot of those decisions earlier, with the benefit of expert professional advice. So literally you can go to the book and say, gee, we have 50 decisions to make, but 40 of them look like they're here in the book. We can spend the next 2 hours focusing on the 10 decisions that are unique to this circumstance. And when you give people a little more time and confidence that the rest of them were done right, they'll tend to make the best decision much more often.
So what's the lawyer's role in all of this?
Well, yeah, there's the lawyers factor into this at a couple of different levels. You know, I find that, you know, my relationship with boards and CEOs and general counsels that I work with on a regular basis lets me, you know, kind of discuss this with them as just a prudence issue, you know, something that, you know, is a best practice. I mean, again, I think there's a lot more attention now among these groups to finding, okay, where is the best practice area and what are the benefits and costs of that? And I think you could capitalize what we're talking about here as a best practice. The next thing, you know, is, well, gee, will we be liable if we don't do this? And there's two answers to that. I mean, one is I think with a rare exception of just maybe a complete failure to plan. I mean, if a company, you know, is in New Orleans or Florida and it has zero planning for responding to hurricanes, and then a hurricane comes through and wipes out the company, you know, the board conceivably could have wandered off into the area that, you know, the Caremark decision defined as sort of a complete failure to address a known material risk to the company. But that's not really where they face the real risk, I think. I think, you know, most companies have done enough planning that they're going to meet the required level for business judgment protection and, you know, will not have an issue of that sort. Where they do face risk, though, is that when managements are stressed in a crisis situation that's unplanned and unprepared for, a lot of times they'll make bad decisions that can possibly pull the board into liability. For instance, if a company, a lot of times companies that are facing liquidity crises, either, you know, the fundamental business is bad or something has happened that's cut off their cash flow, they'll start, you know, trying to engineer transactions to give them breathing room that, you know, create fraudulent conveyances. And, you know, the board may have an emergency meeting called on Saturday to approve moving corporate assets around among the subsidiaries or sell something out from under the lien of the bank and that sort of thing. And that almost pushes you, an emergency can push you into that dangerous area that Smith versus Van Gorkum identified of boards approving material transactions without enough time, without enough process, and gets you in trouble that way. And then lastly, I mean, you know, lawyers will be part of the team on almost all material crises in a company. Either it's going to have a legal component because the government's at the heart of it, or litigation is expected to ensue closely, or there's a regulator who's unhappy that will be in their face. Or even if it doesn't have a legal component, they're going to be disclosing it in their SEC filings, perhaps, you know, with a very short fuse now under the new 8K rules. And having a lawyer as an integral part of the team is very important to make sure that the company doesn't stub its toe on its disclosure obligations when it gets everything else right. I think general counsels would probably find this a useful study to study, useful subject for study. I mean, they very often end up being what approximates the chief risk officer for the company. When bad things happen, they're among the first people to be consulted. And the general counsels I've shared our book with have generally found it to be helpful, I think.
Great. Well, I appreciate your time, Mike. Great stuff.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Hopefully this will help get the word out, and the next round of government investigations and hurricanes will be met with a more prepared group out there.
Thanks.